powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, we are heading into the final hour of Jake and Stacy, technically. Coming up from 1 to 2 p.m., we're going to have the Dugout, which we do every single Tuesday. It's kind of like, a focused Mariners show. It's going to start with the Scott Service show at 1. Before we get to any of that, though, we got to talk Seahawks now that OTAs are underway. Joining us now on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline, it is Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times. Bob, how's it going?
Good. Hey, yeah, how you guys doing?
We are well. We were just reacting to some of the bits of news to come out from OTAs. So I'll start with the biggest one that I'm sure you've received plenty of responses about, which is Rashad Penny being out with a hamstring injury. How should fans feel about that?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's the biggest news. I guess. This is the time of year, you know, you're not pushing anybody to do anything. And they know, you know, we saw what Rashad Penny can do the last six games of last season, and they don't need to be pushing him if he's got any sort of anything right now. Sound like he's doing some extensive conditioning work. And in fact, we sort of saw him talking to with the trainers kind of doing some of that or planning some of that as we were watching practice and stuff like that. I mean, I think if they had to play a game or whatever, I'm sure he could probably play, but this is the time of year you just kind of take it easy. And especially with the guy with his kind of history and stuff like that. We've often not seen running backs do anything. I mean, Marshawn Lynch never even attended these things, turning all his time with the Seahawks. So, we've never seen Chris Carson out there really doing anything during OTAs in the years when he's been healthy. This is a time of year for vets to not really have to be out there much. So I wouldn't read anything into Rashad being out right now.
Bob, a little bit of a different approach in regards to the organization. Usually in this time where they get to phase three and they've got the opportunity to do 11-on-11 drills, they've gone right to it, before the pandemic. What did you make of them saying, hey, we're taking it easy on the 11-on-11 portion of this phase as of right now?
Yeah, that was a little bit interesting that they're doing it that way. They did do an 11-on-11 session that they sort of did indoors at sort of walkthrough speed, and then they went out onto the field and kind of did the full speed, kind of just offense versus defense and kind of the, you know, individual drills, offense and defense, kind of doing individual drills and stuff like that out on the field at more of a faster tempo. I think it's, I think body preservation is becoming just such a bigger deal in the NFL these days, knowing you got to get through 17 games and all that. They might want to ramp things up a bit more for the preseason this year because they're going to have to let their quarterbacks play some to figure out who the best quarterback is in the preseason. And that's not something they've had to do before. They've always just, gotten Russell, a series or two here or there and maybe play one half of one of the preseason games just to get his feet wet a little bit. But this year, when you have an actual sort of quarterback competition and the only way you do that fairly is to have guys playing around him a little bit. So, I think maybe right now they really want to teach everything to the guys and kind of get everybody as healthy as they can through training into training camp.
Yeah, that makes total sense to me. Just to clarify, Bob, for everyone out there, will they at some point do 11-on-11 drills during this phase, or was Pete pretty clear about, hey, they're not going to do that at this phase of it and wait till training camp?
Question. Yeah, we didn't ask that follow-up question specifically. I know they intend to have more of, there were about 10 guys who weren't out there yesterday, and it sounds like everybody who's healthy enough to be out there will be for the mini camp. My sense is the mini camp would be maybe when they're going to do that a little bit more. And I'll be honest, we need to probably ask Pete more clearly about the plan for that next time. They switched up their schedule a little bit as well, and that they're going to have the mini camp in 2 weeks and then kind of have another session of OTAs after that.
Oh, interesting.
Which is something different than what they've done before as well. So I think they're going to want that mini camp to be kind of when they do, um, do, do kind of go a little bit maybe more seriously. And I think one reason for doing that is if you just do that a week earlier, it's sort of one more week of rest basically that they get before they have to go to come to training camp. And I think maybe the OTA after that will be a little bit more focused on the younger guys. It was interesting, we did see after what was sort of the three horns end of practice, we then saw them do and Pete alluded to this in his press conference, but they did about a 15 play session with mostly the younger players, like Jacob Eason was the quarterback for that. But it was sort of a little bit more of an 11-on-11 session on the one field with just kind of rookies and younger guys. So, I think they are trying to do some things that way where they get the guys who sort of need the work, the needed work. And I think veterans, I think they want to just make sure nobody gets hurt right now or suffers any kind of anything, and so that everybody's full go, ready to go when training camp starts in July.
It feels like one of the themes of training camp from kind of like a step back point of view is going to be leadership. Obviously, without your defensive and offensive captains, it's going to be who steps into that role. And we've kind of been assuming it could be a guy like Quandre Diggs. But based on your guys' coverage from OTAs, it looks like there are some young guys who are taking on leadership mantles. What have you heard from Pete Carroll or, in this case, Jordan Brooks, about their willingness to take on that job?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to, whether they're willing or not. A guy like Jordan, and it was interesting. We did, get Pete to completely confirm what I think everybody figured was going to happen. But, Jordan's going to step into what was Bobby Wagner's role of calling the plays on defense, of being the guy who gets the helmet, where he, gets the call from the coaches and relays it to the defensive players. He didn't do that last year when Wagner got hurt. Cody Barton did. But, I think because of the way they're changing their defense a little bit, I think the way you think about middle linebacker and weak side linebacker, it's not going to look quite the same the way it did when you had Bobby and KJ there for so many years. I think what they're going to ask those guys to do on the field a little bit is maybe a little bit more overlap-ish, and so the idea of kind of a middle linebacker is a little bit different than it's been in the past. And one reason why Jordan Brooks will step into that role. But I still think the defensive leader is going to be Quandre Diggs. I think he's sort of he's a veteran guy that everybody really respects and he's used to having that. And I think once everybody gets out there, I still think it'll be guys like Quandre and Jamal Adams and, Al Woods, obviously he's been around for a long time. You've got some guys like that, maybe Shelby Harris. He seems to certainly have that kind of temperament, and obviously he's been in the league for a long time. Once you get all the veterans fully out there, and offensively, I mean, it's going to be whoever the quarterback is going to have to really take on that mantle because it's just part of the position. But obviously guys like DK Metcalf, and he's talked openly about that, some of the interviews he's done of knowing he's going to have to really take that over. And I think everybody's assumption is still that they'll get a contract done with DK probably before the season starts. And once that happens, and once he sort of becomes, a real face of the, an acknowledged face of the franchise for the next 3 or 4 years, that will be something they expect of DK to really kind of take that on as well.
One of the other things that it really stands out is Pete Carroll's, conversation about the quarterbacks in particular, the competition between Drew Locke and Geno Smith. What information did you gather that stood out to you about, Pete's thoughts as to how either Drew Locke is doing in comparison to Geno Smith or vice versa?
It was hard to read that into, and I know that's what we all want, right? Is to immediately this guy's ahead or that guy's doing this.
Right.
But, they've really stuck pretty consistently for the last month that Geno's the leader in the Geno's at the top of the depth chart right now because he's the guy who's been with the team for 3 years and started 3 games last year and has a strong presence in the locker room. But I don't think that's anything to be read into what's going to happen in September when they play that first game against Denver and who's going to be out there. The one thing he did say yesterday was that they're throwing all the playbook out there right now and all the installation and that they felt like Drew Locke is picking it up pretty quickly. From what we were able to see yesterday, I'd be really reluctant to try to read anything into anything in terms of what we saw on the field. As we were alluding to, the 11-on-11 stuff we did see wasn't at full speed. And then the rest of it is just, quarterbacks thrown to receivers with no defense or anything. So, everybody inevitably looks pretty good doing that stuff when they're just throwing the ball around like that. But I think this is really going to come down to training camp. And, you know, again, I think maybe what happens in the preseason, even preseason games can be really tough to sort of judge what you see. But, that was the case with Russell in 2012, right? That they really liked what they were seeing, but then it was how he played in the preseason games, and especially when they gave him that one start at Kansas City, I think it was, and he played so phenomenally and, you know, really made up their mind. And I think that's the kind of thing they're going to be looking for eventually is who is it that really kind of stands out in some sort of thing like that. It'll be interesting to see too. Once they get to the fall, what kind of maybe full speed scrimmages they set up. They've done this the last few years where they've gone to Lumen Field and played some things like that. It'll be interesting to see if they try to set up anything more like that to really try to put the quarterbacks in some more competitive situations like that as well.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey. We're speaking with Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times, recapping the first day of OTAs for the Seahawks. One player we haven't talked about much because there aren't a ton of updates is Chris Carson, though he's certainly a player, if healthy, the Seahawks could absolutely use now that they're without Russell Wilson. What did Pete Carroll say about him? And if he didn't give you too much info, what's kind of the impression you got leaving the first day of OTAs about Carson?
Yeah, it was interesting. Pete did, a lot of the guys that are injured right now are sort of doing their rehabs elsewhere with trainers that they like and stuff like that. And then they're going to come back here. It sounds like everybody will be back in 2 weeks for the mini camp. But he mentioned Carson is back in Seattle now and that they were hoping to get some more info on him over the next few days. And so that obviously kind of indicated that he's here right now and probably getting looked at and maybe talking to them and trying to get a sense of where to go with this. It'll be interesting to see if that leads to anything definitive now. When Pete talked about it quite a bit earlier this year at the combine and the league meetings, each time he sort of just said this was something they probably wouldn't really be able to make a call on until training camp and they know if he can handle contact and things like that. So I don't know if they, want to get some more clarity on that now. I still think even to the positive, I don't think you'd get clarity until he was able to be in training camp and put on pads and see what happens physically. So, there's no real, like, contract-wise, there's no, like, dates coming up or anything with Carson that I know of so that they'd have to make a decision one way or the other. But they would, create some cap space if they did have to, if they got to that point and they felt like he couldn't play and they did have to end up releasing him or something. So, it certainly it sounds, in his case, anything about, maybe there would be some more information coming. That sounds a little bit ominous for sure, because, any information that might come now would maybe lead more to the, he's not going to be able to play or we're going to have to do this or that with him right now. So, we'll see. That's certainly something to keep an eye on over the next week or so.
All right, guys, we only had 10 minutes with Bob today, but Bob has a ton of takeaways and coverage from OTAs. The first day he'll have some as the week progresses at SeattleTimes.com. Bob, thanks so much.
Okay, thanks a lot, you guys. Talk to you later.
All right, let's get to Headline Rewrites.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
Headline Rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
Headline number one, Kyle Lewis on his way to Seattle. He was in the dugout last night, actually.
Good news.
But he was there to meet with team trainers to determine if he's ready to be activated. What is the real headline?
The Mariners need good news in the worst way.
Oh, boy.
They really, really need it. There's a really interesting, not-so-great slash line. Larry Stone, also of the Seattle Times, said Mariners DHs are hitting 155, 257, 324 this season. So, yes,
man,
there's a need for Kyle Lewis. I want to remind you guys, bringing Scott Service on in less than an hour. So obviously, should there not be an update, we'll be asking Scott about that.
No question. We have to. And hopefully he will have some good news to provide for us because, getting Kyle Lewis in this lineup would be huge. And obviously, you don't love the idea. I don't think it's necessarily normal protocol to have a team doctor have to clear him, but obviously, that's the position we're in with Kyle Lewis, and you want to make sure he's 100% healthy and is ready to take on this next workload. But you're not going to see Kyle Lewis out on the field. You're going to see him in that DH spot for the foreseeable future and hoping that he can remain healthy and be a part of this lineup and bring some much-needed run support. That's what you're hoping Kyle Lewis can provide to you, and it's a tough ask to have him do that immediately after being out for so long, but you know, if you're looking for a silver lining here, they are going up against the A's. This will be a soft landing spot if he is indeed cleared and can start tonight. That is the goal. That is the hope.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Rashad Penny sat out Monday's OTA with hamstring injury. What's the real headline?
Injury-prone player sits out with injury. But this time it doesn't seem too concerning. Jake, we've had a couple guests on. Obviously, we asked you if you're panicked. We had on Bob Condotta of the Seattle Times to ask him what he thought about it. How are you feeling now?
How am I feeling now? I mean, I'm fine. I'm fine with it, but it brings a level of anxiety. Not because there's anything wrong with what they're doing, and not that there's any reason to panic on May 24th about a slight hamstring situation, when really I just think it's more of the fact that they're trying to protect Rashad Penny and not have him do any unnecessary drills, really doing everything that they can to keep him healthy all the way up until game time, because he is that important, that vital to this team. But it brings anxiety anytime you hear things like that, because of the past, of the history, and you just want Rashad Penny to be healthy so badly for this team, because you know when he is the type of play that he can provide, and they are banking on that production being there for this team in the running game, Rashad Penny being a big part of that.
Are you like me in that you're almost expecting Chris Carson to remain out of team drills and team activities kind of throughout summer?
Yes. I would be shocked if you see Chris Carson get cleared and that he is participating in team drills and all that. I honestly wouldn't be surprised if they held him out for a lot of stuff in training camp as well, just doing everything they can to lessen the workload for him as time goes on, because with that injury that he sustained, you don't want him to take unnecessary pounding when you don't need to, with the style of play that he has and the physical nature in which he runs. You want to limit that unnecessary contact as much as possible.
Also, just once again, I think it was a wise decision for the Seahawks to get a running back in the draft. I'm encouraged that so many people whose football opinions I trust, like Brock Heward, are really high on Ken Walker, but I do worry if you don't have Carson and Penny gets hurt, one isn't enough.
No, it's not. And that's an incredible task to take on as a rookie, right? And no matter the excitement level you have for Ken Walker, like that's a tough thing to do, right? And I am very optimistic and very excited about Ken Walker, as well as everyone else. But you want him to ease into that transition, be able to ease into that role and play more of a supporting role rather than a frontline role from the get-go, from the jump. And so hopefully that can be the case. I wouldn't be surprised if Ken Walker eventually takes it over just because of, you know, injuries that occur during the season. But wouldn't necessarily love him having to do that right from the get-go.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, Russell Wilson at Denver's OTAs yesterday says he will not get caught up in the emotions of his return to Seattle in week one. Let's take a listen to that audio.
I think it's going to be an exciting time. Obviously, Seattle's been the world to me over the past 10 years. It's a special place, to play Lumen Field. You know, I have high regard for all those guys over there and what they do. I think for me, it's non-emotional, though. It's got to be non-emotional. You've got to be able to go into it with understanding that it's just ball.
It's just ball. What's the real headline?
As if we needed another confirmation that Russell Wilson, kind of a robot.
I don't know how you can go into it non-emotional, but if he can, you do have to question whether this guy's a robot or not, because the emotion that is going to be there, it will be unbelievable, right? It's going to be surreal. It's going to be weird. You know that there was a lot behind the scenes that happened between the player and, you know, the organization and everything else. And so is there emotion? Is there, you know, anticipation of this game on both sides? Absolutely. But I think ultimately what he's speaking to is you can't get caught up in the moment when you're there. You've got a job to do. You've got to be able to stay in the moment. You've got to be able to go from play to play. And this isn't anything different than what we've heard Russell Wilson say over the last 10 years. It's just hard to imagine that none of that will creep in as you're playing this game and as you walk into Lumen Field and there's all this buzz, there's all this emotion, and Monday Night Football, you know, it's just going to be, it's going to be crazy. It's going to be crazy. And whoever can channel that the best, whoever can execute the best and have a clear plan, obviously is going to be the team that wins week one. When week one in the NFL is always so unpredictable.
What did you make of Greg Rosenthal saying Russell Wilson is on the most talented team he's been on? I should reframe that. He has the most weapons he's ever had. Not the most talented.
I believe it in what context, right? So like when Greg Rosenthal is talking about that, to me, when I hear that, I hear depth. I don't hear the best targets he's ever had, right? Because DK Metcalf, Tyler Lockett, that's a pretty darn good combination. Doug Baldwin, really, really good football player, right? But I've also gotten the chance to see Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, and Tim Patrick in person. These guys are really good football players. And the overall depth and the overall weapons that Russell will have, and also running, people overlook this part too, running backs, both of them, Melvin Gordon and Javonte Williams, had 900 yards apiece last year.
Wow.
And both of them had over 8 touchdowns. Like, just from an offensive weaponry standpoint and the depth overall from the offense, I would agree with that statement. Now, the top-tier element of who you're throwing to, I think that's more up to debate, and it depends on, you know, Cortland Sutton, Jerry Jeudy, Tim Patrick. Those guys are all incredibly talented. The expectation, obviously, is that Russell goes there and their stats and everything else, you know, soar. And so I think it's yet to be determined, though, if that statement is 100% true. But I think from a depth perspective, I think that's more of what people are talking to.
I wonder if, because of what these guys became the rest of their NFL careers, that 2012-2013 era of Seahawks wide receivers, let's look at the 2013 team. You had Percy Harvin, Golden Tate, Doug Baldwin, Jermaine Kearse.
Right.
Jermaine Kearse was your number four guy that year. Sidney Rice was also on that team. People forget he got hurt.
Yep.
Like, that is an absurd amount of weaponry that he had to work with back then. And I think because of how talented the rest of the roster was, that group gets overshadowed.
And them being an unknown at the time, right? Like, no one knew those names were, oh my gosh, Doug Baldwin, right?
Well, two of them are undrafted rookies.
So right.
Not rookies at the time, but two undrafted players, people are going to be underestimating them because the chances that national experts were watching a lot of these guys' college tape is pretty slim.
Well, remember, national experts called them pedestrian.
Yes.
And Doug Baldwin made his whole shtick off of, we're not pedestrian, and having a chip on your shoulder for the rest of his career off of that. So, Curtis, you bring up a really good point, and I think that that's very true. And I think it's all going to depend, and we're all going to be interested to watch whether we say that out loud or whether we secretly say it. We're all going to be curious to see what Russell does in Denver with that receiving core and all the conversation of, you know, the talent or the depth that Greg Rosenthal says. Okay, well, we'll find out. We'll find out if that actually is real or not.
Scott Service joining us in about 30 minutes. Before we get to that, though, let's take a look around the NFL. Is the league planning to get rid of the Pro Bowl? That's next.
Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacy is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Taking a look around the NFL, let's start with the future of at least one NFL tradition. Will the league get rid of the Pro Bowl? During league meetings this week, NFL owners are discussing a number of potential changes to Pro Bowl week, and that includes, Jake, the possible elimination of the traditional tackle game itself.
About time.
Really?
Yes! Get rid of it! It's an abomination!
But it's a tradition.
Who cares? It's a tradition to watch a horrible game.
Jake says this even though he watches the horrible
game. No, I say it because I watch the horrible game, and it needs to stop. Put a product that's actually fun
to watch. You can stop yourself, Jake.
No, Stacy, I can't help it. So please put something in front of me that I will actually enjoy to watch. And I think the best thing to do...
Skills challenges?
Yes.
A week of skills challenges.
Scrap all of it. Scrap all of it and put skills challenges. Fastest man competition, strongest man competition, agility drills. Bring back the old school quarterback competition when it was at its peak. I mean,
oh yeah, with like Dan Marino throwing 70
just have
yards.
Doing crazy things.
Come on,
hey, how far can you throw this ball?
This is easy. Put out like an offensive lineman 7-on-7. I mean, just like stuff that would be
crazy
so entertaining to watch.
A team of all skill position players, including offensive line.
Yes, I mean it would be so much fun to watch, and you can get creative with it. And guess what? If you pay guys, if you incentivize these guys, whoever the winners are, they get some serious coin. You'll get them to compete and to do it at a high level, and for them to really make something out of this. Now, if they make that transition, it's then going to be on the players to actually give a product that people are enjoying to watch, or else, that is just going to fall flat on its face, and that will be 100% on the players. I get why the players have taken the stance of the Pro Bowl game and, not wanting to play and making a mockery out of the game, because, it's another opportunity to injure yourself, and you're going to ask us to play another game. You want us 17 games? Oh, and by the way, 18 games are probably right around the corner. No, we're not going to play hardcore, in this Pro Bowl game that means absolutely nothing. But the skills challenge, I'm all over it.
Given the number of delusional people who think that they could keep pace with athletes or don't understand how physically gifted professional athletes are, even the worst professional athletes, guys on the bubble of a practice squad are still the very best guys from their hometown, some of the best guys from their college. I think given that there are a number of people that don't quite understand that, this isn't a unique opinion, but I would love to see like a team of regular dudes competing with professional athletes going at 20%. And just get demolished. Because again, it's
one drill.
I cannot tell you the number of people I have seen, whether it's texting in to be like, I would do that for $1 million less, or guys that like still talk about their 40 time in their 40s.
Yeah.
Like, it's like, bro.
Or 30s.
You can't do it.
Yeah, you can't. And you sound like a fool when you try to bring it up and when you talk about it. I mean, you just do. So I think it would be amazing to be able to watch that, right? Someone said practice squad bowl. Heck yeah. Someone who was on the practice squad, that would be awesome. I don't know how you would determine who like the all-stars would be. I don't know how you vote. Send your favorite practice squad player to the Pro Bowl.
Oh, man, John Ursua would get many votes.
Gosh, number one vote getter, right? Like, my gosh, it would be amazing. But in all seriousness, I think that they have an opportunity to really make an event that would be a lot of fun to watch and fun to capture. And no one cares about the game. The skills challenge at this point is something that everyone can watch and enjoy and have fun and it be lighthearted. But the game is such a joke. They have to scrap it. It is an eyesore.
Panther starter Sam Darnold says, no surprise here, he believes he can be one of the best quarterbacks in the league. And who would say otherwise? That's exactly what you say during press conferences. But Jake, can the former number 3 overall pick be that guy in Carolina? That's
no.
My question.
No.
Okay, cool. Next story here in NFL headlines.
Seriously, no. I mean,
I believe you.
I'm a fan of Sam Darnold. I think he's an excellent person. I like who he is and what he represents. But in terms of a player, yeah, Sam Darnold has proven that he is not. It's not even being one of the best quarterbacks in the league, Stacey. It is. I don't know if he can prove that he can be an above-average starter in this league. Tell me I'm wrong. I have not seen play on a consistent basis from Sam Darnold that would give me any other reason to think otherwise. I just think that he struggles mightily with decision-making, turning the ball over. It's something that affected him at USC. It was a red flag then, and it's played out into the NFL, and it's something that he's just never been able to get over. I don't see him being able to put it all together or being given an opportunity with a good team and them saying, yeah, I want Sam Darnold, right? Like, I don't think he's going to get an opportunity like that. And I believe that he's proven that he's not worthy of that opportunity. So do I think Sam Darnold's going to be around the NFL for a while? Yeah. But top tier quarterback? Mm-mm. No.
It feels like everybody that has bought into Sam Darnold is hoping he can replicate that performance he had in the Rose Bowl against, I think, what was it, Penn State?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, he has never, ever been able to come close to that ever since. That was just one game where he played the game of his life on the biggest, brightest stage in college football,
was a great game.
Yeah, it was. It was a classic game where the Trojans got the win. I think it was a last-second field goal that won the game.
So are you referring to a game that happened back in 2016?
2016, 2017, something like that?
Hey, you know what was going back in 2016? 17. Justin Upton was an all-star.
You killed Curtis with that one.
So, you know, if we're thinking if we're thinking about it from that perspective, like, it wasn't that long ago. So, like, you know, people can clown on the Justin Upton thing, but, like, it really wasn't that long ago. Like, guys, it wasn't that long ago.
And yet it was so long.
I don't think I've ever made Curtis laugh that hard. Like,
dude,
I feel so good about myself.
Curtis has never laughed that hard at one of my jokes.
Oh, my gosh. Like, I might be done with the show. Like, sorry, Scott.
You want to walk off?
Scott Service, like, I enjoy interviewing with you, but I don't think this show can get any better from this point on for me.
Last story here. We'll be quick with this one. You guys all remember, of course, when Ryan Tannehill had his press conference, was asked about Malik Willis and said, basically, it's not my job to mentor him. Well, he followed up on that on an interview earlier today. He said, quote, I meant no disrespect to Malik or anything like that. We've been in constant communication since he was drafted. I'm disappointed in how things got spun and twisted a little bit. I pride myself on being a great teammate my whole career, going back to when I was a kid playing youth sports.
Well, Ryan, the messaging. It didn't get twisted. It's your words that you said, right? And I don't think that people mistook what you said. Maybe you just misspoke. You didn't articulate your mindset well enough, right? I mean, do you guys disagree with that? Because to me, when you say you're not going to be a mentor
to a
kid, Ryan Tannehill said, in his mind, the way he's portraying that is, my job is to be the starter, and my job is not to, you know, focus on helping Malik Willis take my job this year or next year. That's not where I'm at in my career. And that's when that comment is said, that's what everybody takes it as.
So Tannehill kind of said, look, part of it's my definition of the word mentor.
Okay, there you go.
Definition of is. He said, a mentorship is something that both people have to want. Both people have to agree to enter into that. And it's going to have to take a lot of time, energy, and focus. He says, as soon as this story blew up, I reached out to Malik and said, hey, I'm going to be a great teammate to you. I'm going to support you. They're going to make this out to be something it's not. They're making this out to be something it's not, and basically just says, like, hey, we've been good. We've been building a good relationship. But he just says, like, look, there are tons of people that have helped me out throughout my career, but very few people I count as mentors. So he's basically saying, I take that word very seriously. And in that moment, I thought, well, it's not my job to be that guy. I know.
Whatever.
Digging out of a hole.
Yeah, it is digging out of a hole. And maybe his definition is different, but to be shocked at how everybody else took it, like, yeah, it was poor words. You did not communicate that well to the public eye. I think the public responded, you know, somewhat appropriately to what you said and how you said it. And your actions have been different. And guess what? That's great. Ultimately, that's what I care about, is the actions. And that's why I said strongly at the time, you have to set the standard. You have to set the culture. And being a leader and helping other guys out in your locker room, that's important. And to be standoffish is not the way to go. And guess what? Ryan Tannehill has not been standoffish. That's important. But how he articulated himself in that moment was that he was going to be somewhat standoffish to Malik Willis. And I think that's all in the messaging that he gave.
Tyler in the 208 says, I know you guys are talking about football, people being overconfident, like regular people being overconfident about their football skills, but I hear that all the time on Mariners pages, people thinking they can hit a baseball. That to me is even more ridiculous. Thinking that you could face a professional pitcher and get a hit, like a base hit. That to me is wild.
It is wild. I mean, how do you look at the stuff that's being thrown?
No. Thursday night, you can join Maura Dooley and myself for a special one-hour show from 6 p.m. to 7 p.m. live from Media Row at the 87th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards. Coming up next, it's Hype Train.
Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios
on Seattle Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, Friday, May 27th is 90s night for the Mariners, which means the first 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a Mariners neon pink hat. Get your tickets now to watch the M's take on
Let's
the Astros
go.
At mariners.com/tickets. It's also the Friday before my birthday, but that's neither here nor there.
I'm sorry, when is your birthday?
My birthday's Tuesday. I just don't know if you guys
What day
that.
Is that?
For Curtis! Everybody else?
Wait, so We're going to have the Scott Service show on your birthday, Stacey.
Is it unprofessional if my first question to Scott is, what did you get me for my birthday? It's going to be so cringe. You guys are going to want to peel your skin off. It's going to be so uncomfortable. Curtis, take us to the station.
Oh, boy.
All right, it is Hype Train. I read a trend in the world of sports. You tell me whether you are boarding it. You believe it. You have to tell me why. If you think it's just hype, you're not buying in, you let it go on by. So here we go. Jake, you're getting started per usual. Curtis, then we'll go to you. Hype Train number one. We talked about Baker Mayfield, whether or not he could come to Seattle. It's been a topic of conversation all offseason. Here's the Hype Train. Tell me if you're boarding. By week one, Baker Mayfield will be a Carolina Panther.
I'm getting on this hype train. I have been steadfast about Baker Mayfield being a Seattle Seahawk. The reason why I'm changing this opinion at the current moment is the fact that the Cleveland Browns, I think, are going to totally mess this up. They have been a debacle, and they will continue to do so with the way that they're handling this situation. I think it's clear cut. I think it's dry. Stop trying to hold on. And see if you can get one of these franchises to be desperate in a trade for Baker Mayfield. Just cut him loose. Set Baker Mayfield free. You're moving on to Deshaun Watson, Jacoby Brissett. You got Josh Dobbs there. Like, you clearly had this plan of the quarterback room that you want to create and the exit strategy and everything else. You've got your covers. You got everything covered if Deshaun Watson can't play this year with Jacoby Brissett. You're not going to have Baker Mayfield a part of this team, no matter what. No matter what, let him go. Set him free. But if they continue to hold on to him and it goes into training camp, I think the Seattle Seahawks are going to be out.
Curtis, the hype train is that by week one, Baker Mayfield will be a Carolina Panther. Jake's boarding. Are you?
Well, it's impossible to be a Carolina Panther if you're a Seattle Seahawk. Woo! That's right. Baker Mayfield will be a Seattle Seahawk.
You're
week
not
one.
Boarding the train. You just wanted
oh, yeah,
to do,
that's right. Never
you
mind.
You just wanted a sound effect for dropping that heat.
I haven't played this in a week. I forgot how it goes.
Curtis was like, bam.
Feeling
it's
so
like
good about
away
his steak.
From explosion. And it's right. Like, oh, wait, I didn't mean to hit the
why
horn.
Do you still think Baker to Seattle is a possibility?
Because he's better than Geno Smith and Drew Locke and Pete Carroll. At his core, wants to win more than anything, and he knows he will not be able to win with Geno or Drew Locke as his quarterback. Look, when the Seahawks were quote-unquote rebuilding their first time under Pete Carroll, the worst record they had was 7-9. Pete Carroll cannot stand to be any worse than what he was last year, 7-10. I don't think that... Or I think with Geno and Drew Locke as your quarterback, your top potential is probably 6 wins.
Yeah.
Baker Mayfield at least gives you a fighting chance to make the playoffs, because that's what happened with Cleveland the last couple of years. He made the playoffs 2 years ago. They won a playoff game with him. I don't think Baker Mayfield's talent is the question. It's whether or not people can get along with him in the price tag, too.
Yeah.
So I am going to say that Baker Mayfield's a Seahawk.
I want Baker Mayfield to be a Seahawk. I think it makes the season really interesting. And you're right. It makes it easier to win, and that's what Pete Carroll cares about and what he wants. Yeah, I got to not board this train. I actually think it maybe is more likely he ends up staying with the Browns by week one than he is with the Panthers. Jake,
that would be
seething.
Utterly ridiculous.
Next type train into the station. Here we go. Just want to board that one. We're going to, sticking in the AFC, going to the AFC West for this one. There are a number of new first-year head coaches in the NFL. However, this is the hype train. Tell me if you're boarding. Broncos' Nathaniel Hackett will be the most successful first-year coach in 2022.
I'm looking down the list at the names of who could rival him, because I think he is the clear-cut front runner of this. You just look at the roster that he has inherited, and then obviously a trade for Russell Wilson that puts you in the best shape out of any team. Nathaniel Hackett is in the best position. No questions asked. I do think that there are a couple candidates that give him a run for his money.
There
and
are
I think,
9 total coaches.
And
hired.
I think Dennis Allen with the Saints gives him a major run for his money in the NFC South, and there's not nearly as much expectations there. So I'm going to board this train. I think that Nathaniel Hackett will be the most successful head coach out of this group, out of the bunch. You know, I think that they've got a tremendous roster. However, they're, I think Dennis Allen with the Saints, they've got a chance to really surprise people if Jameis Winston can be healthy. This defense is really good, and they've added a lot of talent offensively.
Curtis, you got the final word here. Boarding, yes, no?
I think he inherits the best situation, right? He's got the best quarterback of any first-year head coach. He's got the most roster talent, really, of any first-year head coach, outside of maybe in Miami with Mike McDaniel and the Dolphins. Yeah, I think Nathaniel Hackett will have the best record of any first-year head coach this season, so I will hop aboard this trip.
All right.
I wanted to play the horn.
That will do it for Jake and Stacey today. We are heading to the dugout, and you're coming with us. We're going to start by talking with Scott Service, but it is all Mariners from 1 to 2. Don't go anywhere.